I came in on the 29th of October, and I've stayed, and I have never left. I mean, some people that I know, they said that they were lifers, and they've left. I've never left. And even when I travel, I keep in contact. I go to meetings, and I'm extremely grateful. And like anyone who has been touched from this program, they know that it changes lives, absolutely. So I came in, I was wearing maternity clothes, I had given birth. I was given the name of Overeaters Anonymous by a neighbor, and she connected me with someone, and I called that someone, and I came. And I didn't know what happened that night. It was actually in St. Luke's Church in Metuchen. That is one of the, well, actually, in this area, there were two meetings there at St. Luke's. And one of them was a gray sheet meeting that meant that the food plan was printed on the color gray. And then there was an orange sheet, and it was printed on the color orange. And orange allowed you to have carbohydrates. Gray did not. And orange, you had to get special permission to do the step work from the gray sheet people. So this is how it worked. I went to my first meeting. And I walked home, and I didn't know what happened, and I walked inside the door, and I just doubled over and cried. I couldn't understand it, but there was somebody who spoke that night, and the way it was set up was theater style. No, it was never in a circle, because it was principles above personalities. So you heard the message, and you saw the message from the person who stood in front of you. So I heard the message, and there was one other person other than the speaker who stood up, and she pitched on being a sponsor. And she said that she sponsored seven people, and if we don't give this back, then we can't keep it. So I called her. That's who I called the next morning, and she took me. I was her eighth, and that was the beginning for me. There was someone. And this is really the piece. This is, for me, this is a spiritual program. So it wasn't about me. It was about the fact that I did show up, but it was because of that kind of connection, and someone gave of themselves to me and shared what they did, that I was able to ingest just that portion and be willing to follow simple directions, which were the steps. So in 1974, we worked the steps, and we never skipped steps, and we did one after the other because that's how it was written. And so I said, there's some kind of buzz in the rooms that says that we're not supposed to do, that the fourth step, you should be frightened about the fourth step. And I told her that, and she said, do you want to get better? I said, yes. She said, do you want to stay abstinent? I said, yes. She said, well, then we do the next step. That's how this works. And so that's what we did. And her sponsor was the person, to my knowledge, that brought Overeaters Anonymous to New Jersey from New York. So there were the meetings that I knew of, there were three in the area. And then what happened was we traveled. We went to the Moravian Church. I went with these strangers the following week to the Moravian Church in New York. And we went to a meeting. We also went to a meeting in Staten Island, and I thought to myself, am I crazy? I don't even know these people. But I went. I went because there was something about the way they spoke that hit me. They knew what was going on with me. They had the same kind of thinking. It was, they explained out loud what it's like to have the brain that I have. And I want to bring this in at this point, because I've been listening to a CD, and the language that I heard had to do with strange mental blank spots. Keep it green. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Be vigilant. I couldn't do those things, not with the kind of eating disorder that I didn't even know I had an eating disorder. I thought I had a weight problem. I was in the program about 6 years when that realization hit me one morning when I woke up that this is an eating disorder for me. So for me, I had no defense against this. None. I couldn't keep it green. I couldn't keep it green at all. You know, those are behavioral things. And it didn't work. It didn't work ultimately for me. So what did work eventually was the fact that there were multiple surrenders as I went along. And I knew my truth. And I needed guidance. And I couldn't figure it out on my own. So I needed you. And I knew that. It wasn't only the fellowship, it was what went on. It was the guidance, it was the direction, it was the teachers that I was given who guided me towards the kind of recovery that I had no idea in 1974 that I could ever touch. And I was given that. And that's the gift. So when they speak about these kind of things, you had better believe that I've been in situations where I have a strange mental blank spot, where I just, you know, my illness comes up, you know, in neon in my head, and then what do I do? You know, what do I do then? Do I have that inner willingness to make a call? Do I to tell you how I'm thinking, what it looks like? It's not pretty. This is not a pretty thing. This is something that is raw. It's raw for me. But there's healing that's involved. And as a result, I've been given this reprieve. So let me tell you about times. So it was 1974. I remained abstinent for 3 years. I was leading meetings. I was traveling and leading. The fellowship started to build up. At this point in that Today newsletter, you will see there's got to be 40, 45, 50 meetings that we had. Then there were none, absolutely none. So I stayed abstinent for 3 years. And by the way, I brought memorabilia. So I have Today newsletters. I have the Concord flyers. There are pictures on the back table of people that went. The Concord, that was part of what I did every single year. I went to Harvey Cedars and I went to the Concord. Those were the two strongholds. And then I went to meetings and marathon days and that kind of thing. And I still do. I mean, I've replaced the Concord with the Winter Dream Retreat. I wasn't able to do the Harvey Cedars this year, and I'm on the search for something to replace it because it gives me a pocket of quiet that where I can hear my own thinking a little bit more. I'm in 3 years, and I begin to binge. And in that interim, that period from that time until 1990, I went on a roller coaster ride, and my pattern is to be abstinent for a longer period of time, and then binging, and a longer period of time, and then binging, but nothing that put time together. In 1990, in those in-between years, let me tell you what I did. I hooked on to things that I thought made sense to me. I went to one group that had a very one food plan that everybody had to eat, and my experience with it was that I couldn't find anything to eat. I went on an OA weekend, and at that breakfast meal, I couldn't find anything that I really wanted to eat. So at the end of the weekend, I called my sponsor from this group, and she said, "You broke your abstinence." And I felt surrendered. And I said, I couldn't find any, well, you should have eaten it anyway. And I said to her, "But I feel such relief." And she said, "I can't sponsor you." That was one group. Then I went, and for 4 years, there was a guy on the West Coast from California that used to come here and give retreats, three-day weekends, and his philosophy, I followed his philosophy for about 4 years. I remained abstinent for 2 weeks, and then after that, and I started a meeting based on his philosophy, and I went to the mother group, which was in Bloomfield, and I attended, and I gained all my weight back. It wasn't something that worked for me. His belief was, where does it say in the big book that you weigh and measure? Where does it say in the big book that you have a sponsor? Where does it say in the big... So I followed it because I was grasping for something. And then after 4 years, I went back there. I was just miserable. And I said, "You know, I really want to weigh and measure." And he said, "Well, go right ahead. I mean, if that's what works for you." So that was spiritual for me. I began to weigh and measure. I began to go to meetings. He said beginner's meetings are ridiculous for OA. And I followed it because I was desperate. And I did it for 4 years. And then I started to weigh and measure. And it was like the weight of the world just fell right off of me because I felt surrendered again. That's a brief synopsis of the middle years. And then in 1990, I was still eating. And in 1990, I was dying. I knew that it was as if I was being pulled by my nose. I had no control over it. It controlled me. And I had no choice. Choices were gone. And so I knew I was dying, and I made a decision that I was going to sign up for everything that I was afraid to do. So I went to an outside resource for a food plan. I signed up to go to the Karen Foundation. I called for a therapist. I figured I have nothing to lose because I'm at the bottom. And when I went to the outside resource for the food plan, I said, "You know, I'm not sure if I can do this." And she said to me, and I said, I really try to live one day at a time, and I don't think I can do this. And she went, got up from her desk and closed the door, and she said, "I'm another friend of Bill's." And I knew that that means that Bill Wilson, one of the founders of AA, that's like a short phrase to say that you're connected to some kind of meeting. Mm-hmm. And I was, and I stayed, and I began losing. And the day that I came home from that, I signed up the next morning, and the day that I came home, I walked in with these bags of food and cried, and the phone rang, and it was an OAer, and she said, "I just wanted to see how you are." And I said, "Well, this is what happened, and I don't know if I can do this, and I spent all this money." And she said, "I love working food plans out. I'm the best at that." And so she helped me, and we worked it out, and we did it one day at a time, and I became abstinent. Now, this is in 1990, and I've been abstinent since. Now, that food plan, this is another thing I wanted to say out loud, because I believe strongly in it, and that is that I was able at that time to go to meetings that would allow me to talk about food. And there were glitches that I found. I was so frightened of going from that regiment onto another, more flexible one, you know, with regular foods rather than their foods. And then there were certain foods that were questionable for me, and I used to share it at meetings. And there's something to be said about the collective body to say something out loud rather than one-to-one. One-to-one is great, don't get me wrong. But I got feedback. People said, well, just don't buy it. You know, I mean, really simple things that I could not figure out in my own brain. So the transition happened, and I have remained abstinent since then. My food plan has changed. And I also have medical conditions that are being addressed on a daily basis. So I have had to eat foods more than my regular food plan, and I've put on some weight as a result of it. And that was really hard for me. But this is what it is, and my body is functioning, and it saved me an operation. So there. And and there's also, through these years, a transformation that had to do with the way I think and the fact that there is a spiritual life for me. And that was something that absolutely, it was in also the sixth year where I had to make a decision. And I made the decision to include a God that I had no idea, I have no religious training, no spiritual training, and that I was not going to work and live my life on my own will, that this is going to be God's will. And so fast forward, because I don't know about time, I'm not watching. Fast forward, I read, I have a spiritual life. It came out of necessity. I had nothing to rely upon in my background. And as a result of it, this is the kind of thing that that I grab onto. I read different books at different times. There's one book that's not OA approved that I absolutely love, and if you're interested, I'll let you know what that is later. But I want to read you this. This is in the last 3 days that came out of these books. One was Be Still and Know That I Am God. I need to be reminded of that. That's an easy one for me to carry with me. I have it taped to my phone in my bedroom. Be Still and Know That I Am God. That was like 3 days ago. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and coming in from this day forth forevermore. That God is really going to be there for me from this day forth and forevermore. And there's just something that is so comforting to me to know that that exists and it's for me. And if I am a child of God, then I am his heir and I will not be disinherited. So he'll never leave me, and he won't. This is a saying that I heard, you know, that he has my back. I didn't have parents that had my back. Actually, one more than the other, but that God is there. That I can't be disinherited from him. I can't. He loves me. I'm his child, and you have to know that in order for me to feel this and allow this to come into me, you have to know that I did the step work. I came to believe that I was actually restorable. That had to come before this, you know. And then once I realized that I was restorable, then I could make the decision. And right now, I mean, it's all spiritual, but right now, that's where my direction seems to go. It changes as time changes, but the direction has to do with the third step right now. That have I truly turned my life over to this power, everything, and not held back anything? you know, because I'm riddled with fear, riddled, and it comes and goes, and I go down that path with you and with God. So thank you. So you want to know about the history? My history with this group was that when I moved about 25 years ago, and when I was living in the other location, I would come here on Saturdays. There was like a pocket of time. The group that I was part of founding was the Westfield Wednesday Night Group. Mm. So there was a whole group of us that started that.
Thank you.